That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, your gay ass faggotrini host, Eric Williams. This week, we have the stunning Sam Sanders on the podcast. And as a reminder, you can watch the full video episode on YouTube. So if you're nasty, go look at my gay fucking face there. Now, we're going to get into this gorgeous conversation with Sam Sanders. But before we do, here's three gay tips with O'Mary's Hannah Solo.
Three gay tips!
Woo! I'm Hannah Solo from Broadway's Oh Mary, and here's three gay tips for how to take care of your wigs.
Number one, storage. Keep your wigs in a cool, dry place, just like your poppers.
Number two, you better brush, bitch. But seriously, you've got to brush it out or you'll look like Carol Channing on ketamine. Is that my new fall inspiration? Number three, share the wig wealth. A happy wig is a slutty wig. Come find me backstage and add yourself to the wall of stars at Oh Mary.
Notice anyone familiar? Eric Williams, my dad.
And that was three gay tips for how to take care of your wigs. Stay gay. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Three gay tips. Woo!
Thanks, Hannah. And now, you know him from NPR, you know him from the hugely popular podcast Vibe Check, and you know him from that gorgeous mustache. Enjoy this interview with Sam Sanders. Sam Sanders is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and Sam, I am a bit podcast starstruck. You're a legend.
Oh my, that's very nice of you to say. I'm so honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
I really mean it. Let me just like quickly, for any of the girls and the ghouls listening who don't know the full resume, NPR queen for 13 years, Vibe Check stallion, an amazing podcast.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And also was the host of Intuit at Vulture. Sam, you...
Gone but not forgotten, that show. Anywho, another story.
I was actually re-listening, and it's a true testament to that podcast that you're still getting reviews on Apple Podcasts that are like, it was canceled and yet I still listen. That's a testament. That is a testament.
I appreciate all the listeners on all the shows. Yeah.
Well, you also, I want to give a bit of a tease for what's to come because you give such good advice on all of your different podcasts and interviews and articles. So I'm going to be asking you a personal advice question later on. But
okay,
before we get into it, you did drop a little bit of an Easter egg before we clicked record, which is that you just came off of a run. First question for advice, how can I enjoy being in shape and getting there? Sam, have you always been a runner?
Oh, no. I always had long legs for my body. So in middle school, I just ran hurdles because the hurdles were there.
Sure.
But I became a band nerd in high school, and then band was my thing. And I was not really doing exercise outside of that. But what will make you a runner is moving to Boston. Because those white folks up there, they stay running. I was up there for grad school, and eventually I was just like, well, if everyone's doing it, I got to do it. So I started running and I liked it. That is the only reason why. Boston. That's the only good thing I got out of Boston. The only good thing I got from Boston.
You're not the first person to say that the Boston men have confronted you with a truth that made you change your life. did you find that the Boston men, white or otherwise, was there a certain je ne sais quoi to their sexiness that inspired you to do the running, or was it more of a cultural phenomenon?
No, it was, you know how like in those, there's like those clips on TikTok where it'll be a crowd of black people, and if one person begins to run away, everyone else runs too. I think it was a little of that, but Boston version. Like, I guess I gotta run too. I guess I gotta go.
Well, this is what we're doing.
This is what we're doing.
You know what we're also doing on this podcast is sometimes at the top, I like to confront the guest with their past and a controversial question. Sam, you've tweeted something, and I'm going to read the tweet and make
too many things.
I'm going to make you answer for it, hon.
Okay.
Sam Sanders tweeted, podcasters should make diss tracks / episodes. There should be podcast battles. I've said this before and I'll keep saying it. Sam, who are we battling?
Oh my goodness. I mean, because I know that we're all friends, I was actually just DMing with Matt Rogers the other day. He's a friend of yours too. And I've interviewed Matt several times and Bowen several times, more than once. I want Vibe Check to battle Las Culturistas.
Yeah.
But oh like fun God. Battle, like McDonald's ball pit battle, like not for steaks, just for fun.
Yeah. It's also giving, I don't know if you were ever privy to the canonic scene in White Chicks where there's the dance battle on the dance floor.
Yes, and that energy.
I picture that energy of Lost Culch and Vibe Check. Yes. Who would win the battle?
I mean, Matt Rogers. That's a scrappy motherfucker. That's a scrappy dude. I love it. Listen, I love him.
Listen,
I love him.
I do too. I do too. And he was so scrappy in the Gay Ass Live show that we did back in June in New York City. I knew he was going to be a scrappy girlina, but we do trivia questions. And I talked about this on the Patreon a little bit, but it was, you know, Anna Gasteyer, Peppermint, and Matt Rogers, and Anna and Peppermint, which like obviously icons, legends, only love. They did not know very many answers to their trivia questions, but who knew his answer and theirs? Matt yes. Rogers.
And Matt Rogers, while giving you the trivia answer, can be singing and dancing at the same time.
Literally ball kickball change double time stuff. Yes. I hadn't seen it during the show itself, but I was watching the video back. He is mouthing their answers as they are not able to get there. So again, Matt Rogers, scrappy girl, and yes. I would pay to watch White Chicks 2 Vibe Check versus Lost Culch. Well, because you are on That's a Gay Ass podcast, Sam Sanders, I do have to ask you the famous podcast question. And that question is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
VH1. I've said it before and I'll say it again. VH1 made me gay. Mm. Probably even just VH1 behind the music.
Oh, like, my God.
Watching that series.
I literally just flashbacked to the intro credits, to the dark background that the people would be speaking in during their confessionals about the behind the music. I mean, were there any artists for the VH1 behind the music that really ring true for you?
I mean, the TLC one is probably canon when Left Eye is talking about burning down her man's house. The Shania Twain one is great because I don't know why I love Shania and I always will. The MC Hammer is a cautionary tale.
Oh, God.
I think I love and will consume any and all Fleetwood Mac content, so theirs for sure, but all of them were good. But I think in general, why I say VH1 and Behind the Music is because I grew up in a really evangelical, conservative, Black Pentecostal church where we could not consume any content that wasn't Jesus-based. So only gospel music, not that much TV or movies if they were too raunchy or not like PG. Wow. And so my mother would kind of make exceptions, but for the most part, no. So I remember sneaking in CDs to the house in my underwear, literally, and sneaking and watching TV when my mother was gone. My dad would just nap and didn't care. But I remember sneakily watching a lot of VH1 and just realizing that there was a world of possibility outside of my church and a world of queerness outside of my church. Because people as old as me remember back in the day at night, VH1 would run movies like Rocky Horror Picture Show and Fame. And when I saw those, I was like, oh, if I just leave Texas, I could find some gays.
Yeah,
it was just this world of possibilities. So honestly, VH1, baby. VH1. Followed closely by MTV.
And we thank them both for their service. Yeah. I think it's so interesting to think about you in this very Jesus-based environment. I have to ask, as a baggagey girl who has done all the years of therapy, did you have any sort of resentment towards the constriction of that community when you saw what was outside of it? Or was it more of just an excitement to get out there?
It was an excitement. I remember the fact that all of it was forbidden made me want it more. It's probably part of the reason why I've spent the last 6 or 7 years of my career focused on entertainment and popular culture and talking about music and movies and TV and books. It was this forbidden fruit, and so I wanted it more. I remember in high school taking the newspaper and looking for the Billboard charts every Friday in the paper.
Oh, yeah.
Before you could go online and get them. I remember, like, I had a collection of probably 100 or 200 CDs that my parents never knew about. And I would sit in the bathroom listening to, like, Stevie Wonder for hours at a time. I know my mom thought I was beating my dick off. I was I was playing Stevie.
I wish I could say the same. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I literally have a memory that I very much, unfortunately, was beating off in the bathroom for longer than I should have, especially for a girl who had three brothers who, like, also needed to use that one bathroom.
Yeah.
But I remember being in the car and my mom made a joke about how long of the showers that I took. And I remember I was obviously so naive, and I was like, how did she know that I wasn't just, you know, washing my hair for 35 minutes? But it, like, I think in a way, the way that you felt about maybe some of the pop culture things, I felt so, so ignorant about self-love, pleasure, like sex.
Yes.
Like, I just, like, I think I had such a secrecy to it that I wish it was just Stevie Wonder for 40 minutes. But I do get a peek into your past. Is there, like, with the Stevie Wonders, were there any other divas that still you hear her album or a pop boy that still spoke to you as a young closeted queer kid in Texas that still speaks to your heart now?
Yeah, I remember discovering Stevie in eighth grade, and the first album of his that I got was Inner Visions, and it just blew my mind. And then I remember sophomore year of high school, D'Angelo released his classic album Voodoo. And you could have buried me to that music. I think I had three copies of that CD. One in my brother's car, because I was like, don't tell mom. One in my band locker, and then one in my regular school locker. And whenever I was walking anywhere, I had my Walkman and I was playing D'Angelo. I was obsessed with it. And I found out later, there's some study that says the music you love when you're 15 or so is the music you'll love more than any other music the rest of your life. Something about the brain chemistry in that moment of life, it just latches to you. And D'Angelo's Voodoo was that 15-year-old Sam album for me. What was yours? I'm curious.
I mean, obviously, I and everyone listening is now like, okay, 15 years old. So that's like end of ninth grade, beginning of 10th grade. I mean, it's probably going to be musical theater based because I was, oh my God, it was my religion. I think it was like, it's kind of funny when you think about how closeted we used to be. And I was so
so gay
and so gay. I mean, I was saying that I was straight. I, at 15, had never dated anybody, but ended up getting a girlfriend at the age of like 16, 17, still being so, so, so gay. And I was listening to Dreamgirls. I was listening to The Last 5 Years by Jason Robert Brown. I was listening to, I mean, like, I would literally draw, I think I've talked about this. I would drive home. I was subconsciously in love with my straight male best friend at the time. And I would listen to The Last 5 Years and I would cry as Sherry Renee Scott would sing about divorce. I'm fully 15. And I would cry thinking about, you know, the heartbreak I was feeling while, you know, I think deep down knowing who I was crying about, but just sort of like giving myself over to the feeling of despair. And so I guess we'll say this is 16 because I'm driving by myself. I would never do this in front of anybody else. But like I restarted to re-listen to The Last 5 Years recently, and I'm going to always be a musical theater girlina, but definitely at 15, 16, it's like either that Broadway thing or truly, truly Beyonce's first solo album. Whenever I hear the song Me, Myself, and I, that was my CD-ROM back of my parents' car while they were listening to Dave Matthews Band. I was listening to Beyonce.
Multitudes. Multitudes.
Girlinas, we're more than halfway through the year, and I know you have some New Year's resolutions you have not tooched. But if learning a new language is one of your resolutions, honey, you gotta go to Babbel. Here's why I'm obsessed. I'm a self-diagnosed ADHD girl. No, a doctor has not confirmed, but babe, the proof is in the pudding. Babbel has 10-minute lessons that are quick and handcrafted by over 200 language experts. So with my short attention span, honey, it's perfect. Also, it prepares you to not just learn the language, but actually have real conversations. When I go to España, Barcelona to be specific, I'm not just going to learn how to say, where is the bathroom? I'm going to learn how to ask a Barcelona man to make out. I'm going to learn how to ask for directions, order at a restaurante, okay? But don't just take my word for it. There are studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and beyond that proves Babbel works, which is why I'm so excited to give you a special limited time deal for the gay ass listeners. You can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, and it's only for our listeners at babbel.com/gayass. That's right, up to 60% off at babbel.com/gayass, spelled babbel.com/gayass. Rules and restrictions may apply. I love how pop culture can be a very interesting indicator of our stages of life. And it's so, I give you so many props because as someone who had this, you know, sort of, what do we say, not sheltered, but sort of like this contained life of the culture that you were conditioned in, to now as an adult of so much of your work is about really evolved takes on pop culture, but of course about politics. But I do want to ask about one of the things that you do either in Vibe Check. You had an amazing article in Slate where you were doing giving advice. If it's okay with you, I'm going to get into some of the advice things that you've been talking about. Recently on Vibe Check, you had a really great question about friendship drama that someone was experiencing. And basically, to give the spark notes, it's that this person was wanting to make their friendship work as they were getting, I believe they were getting married or in a new relationship. Yes. And their friend, who is, you know, still kind of, I think, embracing themselves as a gay person, they had lost their mother as a young person. And so I think they were sort of lashing out because they felt like they were losing their friend. Mm-hmm. So I found your answer really interesting about how, you know, what the person wrote in their letter to you is basically what you said that they should be saying to this friend. And mm-hmm. I think that as we get into our, you know, later 20s, 30s, 40s and beyond, I think adult friendships, it's not something that people talk about, especially with friendship breakups. And I myself have, you know, had a big shift in a major friendship in the past year for me. So my first question for you is, why do you think it is that we don't talk about the difficulty of friendships evolving as we get older? And do you have a relationship to either your own friendships or when people go to you with those questions? What's your relationship to the difficult evolution of people growing apart?
Yeah. I mean, I think like, I think so much about how there's an intense focus in Western culture on the nuclear family and two-person romantic-based love relationship being the core of community and how we build community, when in actuality, most of human history has made the basis of community the village.
Right.
You know? And even the idea that Americans just live in a family where it's mom and dad and the kids, that's not historically normal. Most homes, most villages, most places where we live historically have been multi-generation. Grandma's there, grandpa's there, cousins are over there, everyone's here. And so you have a village that is raising the children and that is keeping things together. And so the fact that we don't have a village mentality at the basis of how we build community means that we're just not talking about things like friendship. Because friendship is not, friendship really has no part in the Western husband, wife, nuclear family discourse. It has no place in that discourse, right? It only really exists and flourishes in the discourse of the village, right? So that's like my big like history thing. But then besides that, and I think this is because of it, every cue we have from pop culture on how to navigate any kind of relationship is pop culture geared towards navigating romantic relationships. We have an entire genre of movie just about it, rom-coms.
That's true. Right? That's true. Yeah.
And we don't have, like, there are no genres of film or TV that just deal with the intricacies of friendship. And when we do have friendship stuff, it's rote, it's tired, it's simple, it's flat. Like, the show Friends, they're not having too many complex conversations about adult friendship. They're actually performing friendship as if they're 12, right? And that's the thing, you know?
Wow.
There's no script on it.
Well, let's think about, like, what are any examples that even can get close to the intricacies of friendship difficulties? Like, when you think about, let's go to the deep historic example of Frozen. Anna and Elsa. Anna and Elsa.
Never saw it, by the way. I know.
Really? I'm missing
it. You know what it is? Because by the time I thought to watch it, all of my friends with kids were just saying, if I ever hear Let It Go again, I'm going to shoot my face off. So I was like, let me avoid that.
Well, if 15 is the year that you have your favorite music for the rest of your life, then the age that I saw Frozen, whatever it did, inject it into my veins. It's actually kind of a sweet, it's kind of a sweet herstory because my husband and I have been together for 11 years and it was one of our first dates. We saw it in theaters together. So that might be why I'm sort of like, I was in the right time at the right place for Frozen. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's about, they're sisters, and it is, you know, people say it's like not, you know, it's not about the love stories. It's not about the romantic relationships. So like, sure, they're not friends, but there is a bit of like their evolution of as they get older or as they deal with their new powers or whatever of how they deal with it, with their differences. But are there any other examples in pop culture that you think have done a slightly good job of focusing on the friendship dynamic rather than the relationship?
Yeah. HBO's Girls is one of my North Stars for many reasons, but that is like all the wrong ways to do friendship. I feel like they get really deep into female friendship and a certain kind of female friendship, but they tell you how to blow it up, which is why I love Lena Dunham always and forever. You know what was good? Broad City.
Oh,
they had each other's backs. They had each other's backs no matter what, and they were very, very different.
That's true.
They had no notion of boundary, but whatever. They loved each other.
But see, I love that you're saying that because that is another thing that I was not taught. I think in some communities, there is more of a inherent understanding of boundaries. In the Jewish community, there is not. We know everything and too much. But I think like, okay, so I turn 35 in September. The friendships that I've had for my entire life, I was just with, you know, one of my deepest, closest friends since I was 7 years old. And our friendship is evolving and deepening. And it's just something I never take for granted because I know that you cannot expect a 30-year friendship to maintain its closeness. But I think that the balance of like the boundariness with like being able to respect, love, and accept the changes in the person, that can't really happen if there isn't an inherent closeness with the boundary. If it's like, I don't know if you saw this pop up on any social media platform, but there was these two apparently straight guy best friends who were doing the whole trend. We're like, we're best friends. Of course we blank, blank, blank. We're best friends. Of course we blank, blank, blank. But as the video goes on, I was like, these people are either fucking or have the most codependent friendship with not a single inch of a boundary. And I just don't envy that. I crave the closeness of talking about my deepest fears and about my anxieties and my horniness and my whatever. Yes. But I don't envy the, like, I cannot be happy
by myself without this friend or this person's blank. Yes. That's the thing. That's the danger zone.
Like, I love people. I love talking to people. But I probably need a good 5 or 6 hours of my day, if not more, by my fucking self.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't get these. And you know what? If you like that, I love it. But these folks who are just always around somebody. Oh, my God. There's a certain point in my day where I'm just like, I don't want anyone looking at me.
Of course.
Not even my dog. Go to the other room, dog.
Bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. And like that allows me to recharge and be ready to interact. Because my whole thing is like, I want every interaction to be a good interaction and me at my best.
Yes.
If you're around me 24 hours a day, you're getting 20 horrible hours of me and 4 good ones. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Well, I have said this and I feel fine saying this because it's a very healthy truth, which is that when the pandemic started, Matt and I both were, as everyone was, forced to be home. But then as the world opened up and work started to change, Matt had a job fully remote. My job became fully remote. And all of a sudden, we lived in a world where we were both home every hour of every day. And we went through it. Tragic.
Because even if you love a motherfucker, you're like, oh, you chew your food that way?
I've had friends tell me that all of a sudden their partner was like commenting on how they do their work day or how they do their day for the first time.
See, no. This is why I don't understand couples that are also like professional artistic partners. I'm like, what's going on over there?
Well,
what's going on?
I will agree with you because I forget who I was.
Like, they're just headed to divorce, and the divorce is the next art piece. That is a culmination of their artistic partnership.
It's the sequel to the first movie they made. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
There are some couples who seem to be somehow okay, or they're just projecting that they're okay. But it could not be me. And not to, you know, paint myself as a person who always knew this. I absolutely tried to rope Matt into helping me with X, Y, and Z and getting his fucking opinion on everything. And it drove him insane. I mean, I know this now, and I think it's a very, very big strength, and it seems that you know it as well, is that we cannot be those people who can be the everything and the all things to their partner, professional, personal, and otherwise. It does not work for us. I don't know how people do that.
Yeah. I'm at the point now in my life where I'm like, you know what? I would love some kind of man that seems like a long-term, perhaps, quote-unquote, life partner.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever need a man to live in my house.
Mm.
Live down the street, sweetie.
Mm.
I'll go to yours. You'll come to mine. I'll make you dinner. I just like, I don't, when I think about how I like to live my day, just like my day.
Yeah.
I love hours of just me and my records and my dogs and my coffee and my thoughts and my kitchen table. And then I love hours of with the people hanging out, doing things. But there's like two. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Well, there's also an interesting judgment I've heard some people give recently when they hear about partners sleeping in different beds.
Oh, and I'm a horrible sleeper. And men snore. I have not, every man I've had, God has cursed me. They all snore. All of them.
And are you a light sleeper?
I'm not sleeping. I am a horribly neurotic OCD. Light's a nice way to put it. I have sleep trauma from a brief job at the Washington Post many years ago that like began to drive me insane. But yeah, I'm a bad sleeper. So I have to really take care of my sleep etiquette. And I don't need no man fucking that up.
No, well, I am at my lowest vibrational self when I do not get an eight hours and 45 minutes of sleep, honey.
Wow. Okay. I do well with 6, but I got to get that 6.
Well, and at least I'm A, jealous. B, God bless you for knowing that you need the good 6. I think I'm the good 8, and any less, I just have to really catch, like, it's not that I like lash out at people. It's that my mean critics and deep anxieties just become louder, and I have a tougher time of using the tools to drown them out because of my monstrous thoughts and chaos.
Yes. My interior monologue goes crazy if I haven't had enough sleep. My interior monologue becomes, okay, what is my interior monologue when I haven't slept enough goes like mommy dearest.
Mm.
Just, I got to sleep to avoid that. You get it.
Same,
you get
same. It. Oh, I get it. And I think it's a strength to know this as we get older. And I used to be embarrassed about it. And now I'm like, you know what? This is my now. This is the truth. And yes. I'm going to proudly turn the sound machine on loud. I do want to ask another question. This is actually like my real
I also
deep.
Had one more thought on friendship before we get there. Because
please ask.
This is a thing that I've been thinking about a lot. One of my dearest friends, we started to date in seventh grade science class, Nitra Davis. Loved her so. We were besties. She was like a part of the family. We dated, then we didn't date, but we were always friends. And then when my parents got sick, she was there for me in many ways. We stayed friends. I ended up officiating her wedding.
Wow.
Like 2 or 3 years ago. But the thing about our friendship, some years we were talking every day. Some years it would be months before we spoke. Mm. Sometimes she was caught up with a man and I was like, go live your life. We'll talk later. Other times I was on the campaign trail and had no time to be with any of my friends. But the beauty of our friendship is that like we both see each other and know that every day the other person is becoming a different person.
Wow.
And the way that they show up for you might change because they're changing. Doesn't mean they love you less. It means they're different. It means they're different. And there's a beauty and a gift in being able to watch a close friendship evolve. What wow. if the evolution is a blessing? You know, I think a lot of times we see a friendship evolution as bad, but it's like, I'm getting a gift. I'm getting a new kind of friendship. This can be great. This can be great.
And I think it's hitting me so hard because it, to me, exemplifies the beauty of a friendship of no matter how much time has passed, when you do end up connecting, I still got you. But also, there's no judgment on us taking the time because it doesn't mean we have a lack of love for each other. It just means that we're taking the time to grow and evolve. And I mean, I'm immediately thinking of a friend who's that way. I mean, when I was in New York last month, he was out of town for work. He couldn't see the show. Obviously, completely understood. He couldn't, and then I didn't see him. But we're in a season right now where we're not talking as much. And all That's I fine. Feel still is... Love him. I still love him and I never ever will doubt that bond we have with each other because both of us, I think, inherently understand we're in a phase of building and and the way that our evolutions are occurring is that we're not going to be in touch as much. But I love to hear that you've had that experience. And when you have that two-way street understanding of we have each other, it only exemplifies how close the friendship is because you don't have to actually prove it to each other.
Exactly. Well, and this way of thinking about friendship allows you to not assume malicious intent of your friends. Honey, they aren't out to get you. They're just
Sam,
busy. They have
Sam.
Kids, girl. They have kids. They didn't call you yesterday because they got a 2-year-old. Shut up.
Listen, if you love That's a Gay Ass Podcast, there's like a 94% chance you love the Golden Girls. I know that I do, and I'm so excited to tell you about the Golden Girls Deep Dive Podcast. It's a new podcast that you will absolutely adore. It's not only a recap podcast that goes into like your favorite episodes of the Golden Girls. There is a twist involving true crime. I'm not joking. They have like a full-time researcher that looks into trivia, behind the scenes stuff, and they dive deep. I don't know if you remember in the pilot episode, there's Coco the gay chef. Like, where did he go? You will get that answer with this wackadoo true crimey ending on the Golden Girls Deep Dive podcast. There was also all that crazy stuff about Bea Arthur and Betty White hating each other. They dive into that. They also dive into like the 30 years of unpaid community theater acting gigs that Estelle Getty did before booking Sophia. The Golden Girls Deep Dive podcast, they de-live her. And finally, the hosts are killing it. Patrick Hines has been in the game for years. He is so funny. He hosts True Crime Obsessed, The Goat. He also hosts it with Jennifer Simard. Y'all, Broadway legend, are you not gagged? Go listen to the Golden Girls Deep Dive podcast. They already have hundreds of 5-star reviews. They've topped the charts, and you deserve. Grab that cheesecake, head to the Lanai, and go follow the Golden Girls Deep Dive podcast wherever you listen.
Oh.
The question is something that you have talked about. You had a really great, this is an old article, but I really enjoyed reading it. It's from Into, and they ask you about, you know, talking about your personal life, and the article says that you feel like it's important to keep your private life private, and it's a fair line to draw across the sand. These things are not the subject of the show you had at the time for NPR, nor are they the reasons that you became a journalist. The question I have about that line is, when we talk about the friendship thing and then we talk about being someone who podcasts, who puts your thoughts out for public consumption, I had a really difficult friend breakup a year ago. And I put on the Patreon when it happened a bit of very general things, but I still struggle with being able to connect with a guest, but more connecting with the audience in a way that I'm still figuring out my personal relationship to what I can and feel good about divulging. And yes. So the question is, not to keep bringing this up, but it's like, I try to, you know, when I do the Patreon stuff, to really make it feel like it's more of my personal things, where the podcast, it is personal, but it's also more about the interconnection between the guests. But I talked about this, like, sort of like, again, went in general, but a slutty experience I had in New York for Pride, because come on, I wanted to talk about it.
Come on. Yeah.
But my tummy tells me sometimes, like, Eric, you really have to be able to protect your space, heart, bliss, and feel like you have the control over what you are saying, and not saying it because you're worried about not saying enough. What is your advice about someone like you, someone like me, who, you know, as our job and the way we spend our time is by putting out our thoughts to the world, how do you balance protecting your own heart and experience and feelings while also feeling authentic and open?
Yeah. There are two things. And I think the first thing I want to talk about is, like, listening to our body in these moments. When you said, oh, my tummy feels weird. Okay. That's a sign. My thing now is, if a social event or activity makes me clam up and get nervous before I go and hunch up my shoulders and get anxious, maybe I shouldn't go. If divulging this thing on the podcast makes me a little sick to my stomach, maybe I shouldn't divulge it. Like, your body is telling you what it feels comfortable with. And the older I get, the more I'm like, listen to that.
Yeah.
Listen to that. And it's really been, even this is a sidebar, but I find this especially true the older I get with alcohol. I used to just drink. Now it's drink, sit for 15 or 20, see how you feel. Then say if you want to drink more. I think we have to apply the same kind of rubric to what we talk about and how we talk about it. Our bodies are telling us what we feel comfortable with. I also think, second, besides that, just like listening to your body, like if it makes you feel a pit in your stomach, maybe not. Or maybe think of a different way to talk about this thing in a more oblique kind of way. The second thing is just like game out worst case scenarios. And so I will never forget. And this was a really fun interaction. I've been blessed for every podcast I've ever made to have a loyal, devoted audience of the kindest, sweetest 30-something, 40-something-year-old women. Women love these shows. They're so nice. They're better fans than men. And they're just kind. So I never feel afraid of them. But months ago, when the Beyonce movie came out, I went to go see it at the Grove here in LA, and I was posting some pictures while walking in because people were wearing silver and that was cute. And then we watched the movie. I come out and this woman from across the fountain at the Grove yells out, "I was hoping I'd see you here." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "I saw you post before you go in, but like before you went in, I didn't come here for you, but I was already at the Grove and da 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 da." So I saw, and I was like, "Oh, that's funny. We talked. She was so sweet, so sweet. But what if I had had like a Joe Rogan-esque kind of fan?" Right? And so all this to say, me in the future gaming out worst case scenarios was saying to myself, "All right, some days I don't want to post the Instagram story until I've left the place."
Yeah.
I can still post, but just to be on the safe side, right? And so when I think of talking about dating or family on the show, I also game out those worst case scenarios. Do I, Am I comfortable talking about this man to the extent that he knows that I'm talking about him? Hmm. Am I okay with that? Am I comfortable talking about my family on this show knowing that they might listen? Like, game out the worst case scenarios and always kind of assume that the person you're talking about might be listening.
Yeah. No, I think that's really smart, especially because I sometimes have to question where the pit is coming from. And I think that I absolutely need to be trusting it more, because what I've talked about before that is a huge theme in my life is I was conditioned growing up, while it wasn't the intent, but I was conditioned to not trust my gut, you know, by being told by people that, you know, you're being made fun of for being gay, but you're probably not gay. So it's whatever. When really, of course, I was gay.
Yeah.
And my feelings were incredibly valid because I was being made fun of for the actual thing that I was. So as I'm getting older, when I feel that pit, when I feel those, you know, like you're saying, the shoulders going up, like I really am trying to train myself to listen. But on the other side of it, I have this deep, deep fear of either letting people down or not being enough for people. And then from that fear, it's like, well, if I don't say X, Y, and Z, is that going to be letting someone down or people feeling any negative thing about me? And I've literally recently talked about it in therapy where it's like, how can I work through this fear of the world ending if I protect myself? You know, it's like,
Well, this is the thing. It's like, you can let people down and disappoint them and still love them. Mm. And the act of letting someone down doesn't mean you don't love them. It just means that they maybe had too high of expectations of you. And that's probably not fair, right? So that.
Wow.
But two, I think like you don't want to be in a village, in a community around people where their love is conditioned upon or situational upon you not letting them down. If I have a friend who I'm always scared of letting down, maybe I want less of that friendship. Maybe I want less of that friendship. Like,
Sam,
come on.
I whenever I butter biscuits here, I do it from a very genuine place. And what you are saying is like hitting to the pit of my core, because it all connects to everything we've said. When I had this friendship evolution in this past year, it was because there was a very unfair expectation placed on me.
Exactly.
And there was, you know, a very clear agreement that if I did something to protect myself, I was going to be very much punished for it. Mm-hmm. And it's again, to this point of in pop culture, we don't see the things about friendships changing. We don't see that. It's so interesting how the repetition of themes with relationships in pop culture, with dating, with what love, with whatever. But then when it comes to like the realities of being in a long-term relationship, I talk about, because that's not very much put into pop culture. When it comes to the friendship thing, it's like, it's such a real part of growing up that sure, adolescence is terrible and puberty, you feel insane, but you have a different phase of adolescence in your 30s, 40s and beyond when you're reclaiming your space and the people you fill that space with. And
I think it's major.
Absolutely.
And I feel like last little thing on this, I think like, you know, you mentioning friends having high expectations of you. I have been trying to get to this point where I say to myself, with all the folks that I'm close to and I love and that bring joy to my life, they don't owe me anything. They don't owe me anything. So every time they show up for me, it's a blessing and a gift and I should just be grateful for it. And if they show up more, I'm even more grateful. If they show up just a little bit, I'm still grateful because they don't owe me anything. They're grown. They got their own life. I'm not paying their way. Like, so it kind of turns this thing on its head. Like the friends who feel like they aren't showing up enough, it's like, what if I can be grateful that they're showing up the best way they can right now? Isn't that kind of them? You know what I'm saying? How can I flip
this? Yeah. Well, in my own life have had the understanding when I started to feel disappointed by any type of friend of like, oh, wow, when they do show up for me, I can appreciate it. But also to the point of the expectation is that not all friends are going to be that level of showing up in a way that the other ones are. Not every friend is created equally. And I think
there are different friend love languages.
Yeah.
I remember in my 20s, I was not all through my 20s, I was a party friend. I was not the friend you called to cry on the phone once you broke up. I was a friend you called when you were ready to go out again.
Hmm.
And so, like, not every friend fulfills every need. Hmm. You know, like, I have the friend that I call for tax advice. That's not the friend I go out in WeHo with. That's not the friend I call to talk me off the ledge when I'm like, I think I have to adopt a baby tomorrow. Like, this is like, there's no one-stop shop. Like, different people can provide different things in your life. And the older I get, the more I can appreciate that and say, am I just asking this person for too much?
Well, the biggest lesson I learned in this past couple of years is the phrase, we meet people where they are. And that is exactly what we can do to protect our hearts. And Sam, I want to protect the integrity of this podcast by asking you the next famous podcast question, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Just because she is so talented and multi-hyphenate and also a little cray, Debbie Allen.
Full circle.
Yes. She is, people forget, she's a choreographer. She's an actress. She was one of the greatest sitcom guest stars of the 90s. Mm. She's choreographed award shows. She has a dance academy in South LA, just a few miles down from me.
Yes.
She's done so much.
She has. And you know what? I wish I could remember the exact reference, but there is some sort of, it might have been like fucking Dance Moms, where she had a moment where they did a class at her dance studio. And of course, it was like we were talking about Queen Debbie Allen and the full circle, of course, of the fame of it all.
Yes.
I think this answer is so stunning. And I think she absolutely deserves to be saved.
Oh, yeah. She's also a director. She directed a bunch of Grey's Anatomy for a while. She's done it all.
I'm seeing that too. She really has. And let's just say, give it to us straight. She is 74 years old and still kicking.
Still, like, literally kicking. Dance kicking. I mean,
kicking face. when we talk about...
And she could, like, direct her own thing. She could self-direct. She'd write her own script, do her own choreo, one-woman show, and direct it. Just give her a camera.
Is this a safe space to tell you something that I just learned about her that I'm embarrassed that I didn't know?
Oh, my God. Tell me.
So Debbie Allen, I've known, you know, I think the main tenets of her history, but I'm embarrassed to tell you that relatives of her that I didn't realize, her sister is Felicia Rashad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine. I did not know
Can
that.
You imagine the two of them as kids?
No.
Imagine.
I am gagged. I am absolutely gagged. She is the younger sister of Felicia Rashad.
Yes.
I am so dead.
Yes. Yes.
What is in that family's orange juice?
Yo, bottle it and sell it. The talent.
God, we love Debbie. We also, you know, if anybody here is in a gay married couple with children who want to go to dance school in LA, go to Debbie Allen Dance Academy. Make sure you are signing up and go watch the reruns of Grey's Anatomy, which she actually also not only played Dr. Catherine Avery, but she was an executive producer and directed more than 50 television and other film productions. God,
she's
what
a talent.
Great answer.
She's great. A cousin of mine was in the dance academy when he was a kid, and I got to go to one of their Christmas dance recitals. One of the most beautiful expressions of humanity I've ever seen in my life. I tell you what. So they all dance. Debbie comes out with the kids dancing. Then they all do the dance. Then the show is over, and there's just so much energy. They go out like into the lot, into the little yard, and they keep dancing for like 2 hours. And all the parents are there and they're playing the music. And it's just like, it was so beautiful. So beautiful.
That, That is a celebration of our humanité. And also, if I may project, I'm just going to project by thinking that there's going to be at least three young gay boys that are a part of that dance experience, and they are just living their bliss and feeling supported, and they are healing my, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but when I was younger and very closeted, I knew I wanted to study musical theater in college. And so I was like, well, Eric, you got to go to dance class. And I literally, shout out to COCA in St. Louis, Missouri. It's this school. I did a beginner ballet class. I think I was 17 years old. And it was me with a bunch of 10-year-old girls. And somehow, even though I remember being very embarrassed, I found the strength to still drive myself to this class. And I think if I could give my younger self a gift, it would be to know that A, I was doing it at the right time in my life. It didn't matter that I was embarrassed. It didn't matter that I was closeted. But I just love the thought of just celebrating that dance makes you feel good. And it doesn't matter if you're a fucking boy, girl, or otherwise.
Yes. Well, and like, movement is required. This is what I tell myself. Yes. Like, humans and bodies are meant to move. So whether it's exercising or dancing or fucking or whatever, like, you should move. You should move. And you should not be ashamed to move. Like, if your movement is dance, fucking dance. If your movement is whatever, like, move. I mean, I say this to myself as someone who is on the cusp of 40, and I'm like, you have to keep moving your body or it will just like hunch over.
No, I know. My 95-year-old grandfather, he has said it to me every time I see him. If I knew I'd live this long, I'd take better care of myself. Yeah. And then he says, tells me I need to stretch every day. I need to boop, boop, boop. And I am
not lying.
He's not lying. And I'm not proud to say in this moment that like I can do a better job of that. And I've been saying that I'm going to wait till I make enough money to like hire a great personal trainer to motivate me to get out. But I can't wait to make that much money because I just need to do it now.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing about a personal trainer. You go see him for a month or two, write down what he tells you, then you can do it yourself. It's not a forever proposition.
But then if we end up not stopping working together, we can maybe even deal with the sexual tension that has built up and then sleep with each other.
And then it's free.
And then the workout is free.
Yes. It has
because
to be free.
You're not even exercising. You're just really fooking.
that is the exercise. How can we make our hour-long session a bedroom session?
Do you mind instead of the treadmill, we just rail each other?
Bam. That sounds like you're checking several boxes at once. You're multitasking. I endorse.
Oh,
go find this trainer. Go find this trainer.
Sam Sanders endorsement, honey. Hot Trainer 2024. That's my platform.
Bam.
Well,
that's it.
Listen, it is so shocking to me that we have to get towards the end of this episode soon. But I have to say that so much amazing advice, so many amazing talking points. But I do have a question for you that I did not prep you on, which is our final question of the ep.
Okay.
And Sam, if you have said that VH1, that MTV has made you gay, what is keeping you gay today? Is it a certain show, a certain musician, a porn star, a sandwich, a restaurant?
I'm gonna tell you exactly
what is doing
what it?
It
is. I'm gonna tell you exactly what it is. What is keeping me gay is seeing heteronormative families with kids be miserable. They're miserable. I tell you what. And I'm not talking to my close ones, my loved ones, but I'm in LA, a city where the nuclear family is a performance art. And I call it like the Silver Lake Dad. It's a 42-year-old dad who used to work at a label, still wants to dress like he's 24, and is like trying to look so cool with his toddler who's wearing a Ramon shirt on a tricycle. And he's miserable. His wife hates him. He hates his wife. Both of them want to get divorced. The kid, Tallulah, has no idea. And you just see the misery all over them. And I'm like, no, baby, I'm staying gay.
And also, they might have chosen to have that child because they thought that they were supposed to.
Exactly. Okay. They don't want that kid.
Not to go into a full tangent at this end here, but someone told me, I was talking about children with someone, and someone told me that they went down the Reddit rabbit hole of a message board that was, the topic was, I regret having children. And she said,
oh my
God, dark, dark, dark.
Wow. It's also one of those things where it's like, I know, and I have really close friends who have kids, and I'm not talking about them.
Same, same, same.
Yes,
and
yes,
listen, and let's make it very clear. Those people we're talking about, they went through the work and the thought process to make sure they obviously wanted, and that's the best parents, the ones that really, and that's why
they know
gay
they
parents
want it,
can
doing
end
it
up being amazing, because they really had to fight
because we had to think about it, we had to fight to get it. Yes,
right.
But like, I, in a thing I noticed with like the Silver Lake Dad of it all, the performative LA parenting of it all, it's like you have a lot of these now middle-aged adults who wanted family life, but they actually have no family around them.
Ooh.
So it's the two of them with one or two or three kids and whatever help they hire. When in my childhood, literally my Aunt Alta, my mother's sister, who was single with no kids, lived down the street. She was there all the time. Hmm. The daycare we went to was around the corner. We were in a church that was full of folks that would like watch us. We were in a village. And so many of these LA parents or New York parents, they don't have a village. Their parents are in the middle of the country, you know, all that they have is the help that they hire. And that just seems like a really hard way to raise a kid.
Totally.
Hard way to raise a kid. So I'm like, if I ever do it, and at this point, maybe not, I need like an actual, like I need two or three folks close to me where no matter the time I can call them and be like, take this motherfucker for 3 hours. And they say,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they say,
the
okay.
Village.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful answer for what is keeping you gay. And Sam, you keep it so delicious and so real. And it has been a very true honor to have you on this podcast.
Can
you please tell the listeners where to follow you?
Yeah. So I am on pretty much every social platform as at Sam Sanders, SamSanders. I'm most active on Instagram, and I share whatever audio stuff I'm doing there. My podcast Vibe Check that I host with my dear friends, Zach and Saeed, publishes new episodes every Wednesday. But just for the month of June and a little bit of July, I was doing some guest hosting for a news podcast called Apple News in Conversation. Did a bunch of pop culture interviews. I got to chat with Emily Nussbaum about her new book on the history of reality TV. I talked with Franklin Leonard of The Blacklist about how to fix Hollywood. So I've got about 5 episodes in that queue. The podcast is called Apple News in Conversation. Wherever you get your podcasts, it's there. And then lastly, and I'll announce this a bit later more formally, but I'm cooking up something new that should be hitting listeners' ears and maybe eyeballs in the last quarter of this year. So stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Oh, yes. Tease. Yeah. Well, I will link both of those podcasts in the description, and obviously follow Sam. And I am so, so grateful that this happened, and you have elevated Gay Ass Podcast to your genius, and it has been a gosh darn on, truly.
No, I thank you so much for doing this and for your patience for us to make it happen. But I really enjoy your hosting, and I really like it. It's so exciting to just like get to be on the other side of the interview and like enjoy it, but like take notes. So I was taking some notes. So thank
you
for
my
that. Thank you for
God.
That.
Well, I am taking that compliment and to infinity and beyond. Bless you. I
appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Sam Sanders. Damn, that guy gives good pod, and y'all give good listenod. I'm so grateful to my gay ass listeners, and I hope you're ready for another incredible guest next week. I'll see you then. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.